content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. So, if you happen to have your 13-year-old listening in...
That's your problem.
Hello, everybody. How are you? And welcome to Spiritually Raw. Thank you very, very much from wherever you're at or around the world. So good to be here with you today. And listen, if you'd like to be a guest on our show, all you have to do is go to spirituallyraw.com and just fill out the information there. It'll get right to us. We'll review it. We'll connect with you. And let's see if we got a fit here together and have you become part of this show also. And for those of you who are checking this out on YouTube, don't forget, and thank you for that, is to like and comment and subscribe to the videos and also share that along. So, you know, really helps this movement going right now, as we all acknowledge, right? We're all in this together now. So just thanks for pushing it along. And if you're watching this right now, that more than likely means that you're watching this on Patreon also. So thank you for that, for your support on that and keeping that going so we can get these quality guests out for you.
And don't forget our Spiritually Raw Facebook group. Connect with a lot more like-minded and truth seekers. It's a great group. Everybody's super friendly. You can post all of your information, your business, your personal, happy posts, controversial posts.
All the other posts.
All the above.
Yep, all the other posts. But you know what? It's all good, though. So anyway, we got a couple of guests here today. I want to introduce you to Wayne. He's going to be on, too. And we're also going to have, as we did last time, we're going to have our special segment. So we're going to get up to speed on what's going on in the world of QAnon. And then we have Sean Morgan here with us, who's an independent journalist and YouTuber and author of QAnon for Beginners. And also, you can check him out at QAnonFAQ.com. So Sean, what's going on, brother?
Well, Q has been posting furiously. I mean, today is May 21st that we're doing this show, and Q has posted several times some very juicy links for people to do their own research and explore. But the latest one is about the CIA's use of journalists and clergy in intelligence operations. And there's a link to the United States Senate government website. And it says, is the CIA coming back into the news soon? So Q is foreshadowing that pretty soon the CIA is going to be in the spotlight in the media. And the link, the post right before that post was also today, posted at 11:50 a.m. And it's a link to the CIA government website. And it's a link where you can learn about the historical relationship between the CIA and the news reporters, that there have actually been news reporters who are CIA agents embedded within those organizations and perhaps still are today. So very interesting that Q is pointing us in this direction to research the CIA, because the CIA is apparently part of Obamagate, a part of the spygate of Donald Trump's administration as he's been coming into power in 2016. So if you want to learn more about Q, you can go to my website, you can read the free ebook. And if you want to actually read Q's posts, I recommend going to qmap.pub to learn more.
Thank you. So Sean, what do you think about the CIA infiltrating the media? I mean, it seems pretty realistic. It's not far-fetched.
No, it's highly documented. It's called Project Mockingbird. And so this was, many times that the CIA has openly admitted that they infiltrated the news organizations. And you've probably seen it in a really good documentary that was put out this year. And there was a CIA agent in the documentary talking about it, but it's called Out of Shadows. Mm-hmm. And so the CIA is the dirtiest of all of the intelligence organizations. And Q has talked about from the very beginning that Q is from military intelligence, which is separate from the FBI, CIA, and NSA. So what Q has said is that the CIA is so dirty that it is absolutely impossible to clean and reform, and it will be broken apart by the end of this whole Q operation.
You think so? And when you say the end of the Q operation, is there some sort of time frame that, you know, a lot of people follow in the Q messages and the movements, the Q drops? Is there a particular time frame that end happens there, or if we can say, okay, this is the beginning of the end kind of thing?
Or is it going to continue?
Or are we in it right now? Are we at the beginning of the end right now?
Yeah, good question. I mean, people are anticipating something that Q has described as the storm, which is this time period when there's a public disclosure and public accountability of treason and the people who committed crimes, not just in the United States, but around the world in global institutions. And so people are anticipating that this storm could end up happening before the November election of this year. So many, many people are thinking that the Q operation, especially in the United States, is really coming to a crescendo before the election of this year. And I don't see why Q would stay anonymous after the storm. So for me, the Q operation is not going to last much longer than a couple of years at the most.
So it's really, it really is kind of right around the corner, isn't it?
Yes. And then you think that whoever is behind Q, whether it's a person or a team, you think that they're going to come out and disclose who they were and what they did in the whole operation?
Maybe not specifically identities of people, but I think that it will become public whether Q was in fact authorized from the executive branch, from the military and the government, or whether Q was some other operation by another individual. I think that that will come to light and be publicly disclosed. And Q has said, just wait until you find out who's been talking to you. So basically, he's kind of intimating that it's a significant kind of maybe famous person involved in the Q team.
Do you have any thoughts yourself personally?
Well, Q has stated that there are 10 people who know the entire plan and that three of them are non-military. And so I would imagine some of them were in Donald Trump's family. It could be obviously Trump himself, perhaps his wife and his son, Don Jr., is a major player in everything. But General Flynn, many people think General Flynn is a part of Q team because he's a general and he's been a part of this whole saga. He's been targeted so much by the deep state. So those are a few people who might be on the list, but I'm not sure about anyone else.
Sean, for those of everybody that's just kind of still catching up with the news cycle and everything, is General Flynn, is he full-on exonerated now? I mean, is he free or is there anything left to be done?
It's a really weird legal limbo that has been put out here. Basically, what happened is the FBI dropped its case against Flynn, so there is no prosecutor anymore. So I don't know who on earth would say that he's guilty of anything if no one's accusing him of anything anymore. But basically what the judge seems to be a corrupt deep stater, and the judge has opened up this weird thing, an amicus brief, where people from the outside of the court, the friends of the court, can come in and just give their opinion about the matter. And so we're just kind of like waiting for that whole charade to be over with. But they're just delaying, they're just buying time because they want the president to pardon Flynn. If the president is forced to pardon Flynn, that means Flynn cannot join the administration again. So this is just a delay tactic. It's not going to work. Flynn is innocent. And so what's going to happen? Hopefully Flynn will join the administration after this whole charade is over.
Now, didn't they also have him in solitary confinement for like a long time?
I don't know. I haven't followed the Flynn case very deeply, but it's a very important to the Q community. And I think that Brendan Dilley from the Brendan Dilley Show has done a great job of researching the Flynn case. So if anyone wants to check out that, he has a lot of good resources on it.
Yeah, right.
I just want to get one last question. Is it QAnon or is it QAnon? Is it like tomato, tomato? It doesn't really matter.
Well, that would depend on where you live in the world.
Well, that's right? What I want to ask.
I mean, if it's Anon or Anon, I mean, like where you live in the world.
Q.
I think that the word anonymous is pronounced Anon, and so that's the way I pronounce it.
Got it.
Well, Sean's segment today, so we're going to go with what he said, anonymous, QAnon. Sean, thanks, brother, for being on here.
Thank you so much.
Yep. You're welcome.
We'll see you next time, all right? Yep. Have a great day, man. Sean's always got some great stuff, doesn't he?
I know. I love it. And I know. I love when he comes on.
I know. He goes right in. Goes right into it, too.
And he breaks it down on the ridiculous.
Yep.
That's why he is the specialist for QAnon beginners.
That's right. And we ask the questions.
Yes.
Speaking of questions,
we have Wayne McFarland. Now, hello, Wayne. How are you? He says, my main claim to fame is mostly and surprisingly not being dead. Plus, getting involved with a lot of strange stuff, usually unwillingly or by accident, Wayne has over 35 years of conceptual design, corporate project management, development, marketing, sales, and product management experience. He is the author of You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled, How to Launch Your Book Without Getting Hurt, Hammered, or Fleeced, a step-by-step guide. And you can find his book on the Book Patch, Amazon, and independent bookstores nationwide. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Wayne McFarland, everybody. Welcome. Welcome, buddy. How are you doing? I want to get right in. Let's get everybody to get to know you. So some notes we got here. Johnny Cash, as in Johnny Cash, hit on your wife and you lost 10 grand in Hollywood. Yeah? Am I reading that right?
That's right.
Let's go down that one. Yeah, what happened there?
That was my first book called Tales from the Day, and there's the shameless plug right there. And which one do you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, what happened there? What happened there? Whole experience,
actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we were doing some... Later on, owned a software company, and we got into it by doing some special effects back in the day for live television and stage shows and that kind of thing when lasers first came out. So I got for the Hollywood Sign, I got a call one day from this guy. Sounds like a mob movie, right? This guy calls me and says, we have a contract to, they reopened the Hollywood Sign, which was a wreck. Hugh Hefner did a big fundraiser, and so they did a live TV thing to open it, to pull the cloth off, and there's the news time. So they said they'd like to hire us to go up and ballyhoo the sign with lasers. In other words, have lasers go over it as they did their thing. And it went live to about a third of the country. So when I got the call, we, of course, had no lasers and no money. So we borrowed all that. And the night of the show, the live entertainment was a lady named Lola Falana. Now, I didn't know her, but I love the concept of her. I mean, here's a lady who had her own song, What Lola Wants, Lola Gets. And in addition, in a Baccarat game, won part of a Major League Baseball team, which she later sold for $14 million. Now, how could you not love somebody like that?
Yeah, right.
So it never sleets in Southern California, right? Yeah. So that night it was sleeting. And lasers don't like that at all. They want to be just at a certain temperature and so forth. So our big moment came, and they did the countdown, you know, with the fingers and all this. And we fired up the first layers of laser, and it blew up right away, which was like a $5,000 pop. And then we were holding umbrellas over the second one, like an old-time black and white movie. And that lasted about 2 seconds, and that one went up. So I was sitting with my wife at the base of the Hollywood Sign. Now, that's really beautiful. You know, you can see Santa Monica and everything. And I said, well, we just tanked in front of about 10 million people live and another 10 million tomorrow on tape delay. So, you know, welcome to Hollywood, right? But I said, at least tomorrow we get paid. The production company, you know, paid the day after. So next morning I called him up and I cheerfully said, hey, I'd like to buzz over and pick up my check. And the guy on the other end of the phone said, well, good luck with that. They just declared bankruptcy. So just on that day, that morning. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting at my desk and, you know, guys, I had my head in my hands. I don't remember if I was weeping, but probably. I mean, we were already broke, right? So my wife comes in and joggles my elbow and says, you have to see this. And she had a copy of the LA Times. And they had a tremendous review raving about us. And as it turns out, when it started to sleet, all the entertainers and the reporters and everybody went into the trailer where there was an open bar.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody got hammered, right? So when the big moment for the unveiling came, the now bankrupt company had done it with their searchlights. We never did a thing. And it was we lost 10 grand, but it was the best review I ever got. In all
of
yes, you man.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what you guys talk about sometimes, as I understand it. You know, you get into things, and if you're open to life, you just, things start rolling, and you.
It's so true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's so true. You know, yeah. You just got to let it go. You got to let it flow. You know, not to sound like a cliche, but yeah, you know, you got to be open to life to let life do its job for you, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of opening to life, did you get shot in Arkansas? Am I reading that right?
Yeah.
All right. We, how about that one? Tell me about that one.
Three friends of mine and I decided that we would go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. I mean, there's a goal. Go down and get drunk in New Orleans, right?
Never happened.
So it was during the height of the civil rights era. And we about, I don't know what time it was, 3-4 in the morning, dark. This car pulled up behind us with big searchlights. So we pulled over thinking it was the cops. And after a while, nobody did anything. So we started to pull off and they cut loose at us. They shot me and shot my friend and filled my cars full of bullet holes. And here's a tip. When you're in your 20s, if you want the greatest line in the world, have a car full of bullet holes. Because going up to somebody and saying, you want to see the bullet holes in my car? I mean, that's the best line ever. But it's
someone actually want to get in?
It's not worth getting shot to do
I'm
it.
I'm good, so, man. I'm good. I believe you.
Yeah. So we ran away and got to a little town in Arkansas, mm-hmm. right in the border of Oklahoma. And the sheriff came down and we told him our story and he called somebody and pulled his gun on us and threw us in jail. So welcome to the South. But you're in Florida. I mean, that's a bit different, right? So they transferred us to another jail, and I finally got a call out. They held us for a week, and we were shot up. My friend and I had both been hit. Nothing serious, but my friend got a dueling scar, and he was a handsome guy anyway. I got hit in the nose, so I looked like Ronald McDonald, you know. And I will now, in front of your entire audience, which I know is quite large, I'm going to admit something about that episode that has embarrassed me for years. And
Do it.
I have not. Well, yeah. I always thought that in times of crisis, being a manly man, I would say a manly thing, like, lay on Macduff and cursed be him when first cry is old enough, Richard III. Instead, I said, they got me. Ugh. Like every terrible black and white cowboy movie ever made. And I'm embarrassed about it to this day. You know, and I was thinking to myself, a crooked smile with straight teeth and all that didn't work out. So we're in jail and they're coming in every day. This was when they were killing civil rights workers down there. And they were telling us they were gonna kill us actually. And so I finally lied to a trustee and got a call out. And it wasn't 20 minutes later that the sheriff, who was the brother of Pretty Boy Floyd, a notorious gangster of the 30s, came in after we'd been there a week and said, why, these boys have been hurt. Get them to the hospital. So off we went. And we found out that 20 minutes after my call, my parents called the newspaper and the president of our college and so forth. The phone starts ringing, and finally the governor calls of the state where I was from, Minnesota. And so we know you got those guys down there, and they hadn't better get hurt. And the kicker, and there actually is a kicker, as it turns out, the president of our college had called the governor of Minnesota, who then called the jail. Now, you guys are watch political events and stuff, and have your own, you know, moments like this, I know, because it takes courage to do that. And it bothered me for a long time after that. And I finally asked for an appointment with the president of the college. And he acquiesced. And I was really a lot younger then, but I said, why did you do that? I'm glad you did that. But even then I knew what a tremendous risk it was for him. Think of the political capital that guy expended to pick up the phone, call the governor of the state, and induce the governor to call this little one-horse jail down in the deep South. And, you know, April and Jay, I expected him to say something like, well, you seemed like a nice young man, and you dated my daughter, which I had at one time, I might add. But instead, he got up and he walked to the window. It was one of those dreary Minnesota days. And when he turned around, he was weeping. And he told me the story that his entire family had been killed by the Nazis in Germany, including his mother, who was the senior contralto at the Berlin Opera. Mm. And And he said, I told myself, he and his brother crawled under the wire to get into France before it fell. And he said, that day I told myself that I would never stand by. Never, never, mm-hmm. no matter what.
And that was that, huh?
That was that. So, and I think April and Jay, I think he saved our lives. He's gone now. But you still
think about him every day, it seems like, right?
Every day. I mean, when you, and that's the thing about, you know, you guys were making the point about getting out there into life. You know, it changed me forever. I mean, I was from a small white bread Midwestern community. I mean, it never occurred to me that there were people out there who not only did terrible things, but were raised in status in their communities for having done them. Never occurred to me, but it occurred to me after that, I guarantee you.
There you go.
And that was, I like to think most of the stories in Tales from the Day, another plug, are humorous.
let's get into,
I have a question about, so when did you actually settle down and write, you're an author, don't get hustled?
Well, it was after publishing my first book, which was Tales from the Day, and out there,
You love that book. Really cute because you can see it's like your baby. You're gonna break.
He's doing this to it. You know what I mean? This is what you're doing, right?
I love it. It's cute.
I put out the first book, and there's so many hustles out there.
You are blushing.
Stop. It's a problem with color TV. You know?
We can see you. Don't worry, man.
There's so many hustles out there for new authors who are unsophisticated. They haven't been exposed to the media. And I thought I was pretty sophisticated, but I got hammered. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write a little how-to book for new authors about watching out for hustles and what you're going to run into out there. And there's a lot of people who say they can do what you guys do. I mean, you guys can do what you say you do. But there's a lot of people out there that say they can, but they can't do anything. You know, so it's a dangerous world.
It is a dangerous world because there's a lot of dangerous messages. So when you wrote the book, what'd you write it with the intent of?
Which one?
Not your baby, the don't get hustled.
Okay. I tried to price it at a low price point, and because my main purpose was, you know, I don't sell any author services or anything like that. I just wanted, you know, there's a lot of really good people out there that want to tell their story. And I didn't
more now than ever.
Yeah.
It seems like authors are just popping up tens of thousands monthly, if not weekly.
Because they're at home. They have more time to be able to now concentrate on whatever their vision is.
And or you know, the dream of writing the bestseller.
Yeah.
And that people take advantage of that, take people's hopes and dreams and.
Yeah.
And try to get them to pay them to make them come true, and they really can't produce for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote the first one, Created My Baby, when we had sold a company out here that my wife and I owned. And I started, I've always loved to read, so I started reading a lot of memoirs and biographies. And I have to tell you, April and Jay, most memoirs really suck. I mean, they're really, really terrible, you know?
They're boring. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they really are.
Most of them try and... There's an old humorist who said a memoir is when you put down all the things you didn't do and leave out all the things you really did do. So I was reading this memoir, and I thought, you know, that's not how it works. You don't start out all looking at the horizon with your hand over your eye and say, I'm going to climb the mountain. You end up climbing the mountain because you're getting chased by somebody. I mean, things just happen, right? So I thought, okay, I'm going to do a memoir, and I'm going to do 27 stories like Johnny Cash hitting on my wife or pitching a loan shark, you know? I mean, because that's the way that things go. I'll bet you guys, I don't know when your book is coming out, but soon I hope. I'd love to hear some of the stories about the folks you've been doing this.
We have a lot of stories to tell.
We got to just put that down, man. It's such a pain in the ass to write a book. It's got to be. It's like
you got to give people a lot of credit.
It's so overwhelming. So, I look at that. I don't know how you do what you do, man. I'm telling you, because I think about that. I'm like, okay, that discipline and what it takes to just be okay. I mean, you got to get yourself in a state. Like, what does that even look like? You got to get yourself to like, okay, kind of like you're getting into a boxing ring, like shake it off. Or, you know, do you just kind of go with it?
Well, I think the biggest thing is what you guys face every day. I mean, you put a show out there and you never know how people are going to react. I mean, you may have a good idea now, because you've done, but you're putting yourself out there and you just never know how people are going to react. Mm-hmm. And so my thing, I think what really helped me is when I started, I sent around a few chapters because I thought, you know, does anyone really want to hear about roping a bear? You know, I mean, I don't know. So I sent a few stories out and I got a pretty good response. So that helped a lot. And, you know, in terms of how you sit down and do it, you are right. It's like a book virus. I mean, you got to self-quarantine yourself and you're...
That's a perfect analogy. I
don't even know how.
You're all alone in there inside your own head. And you're doing all this stuff and you're hoping it's good. And I was, you know, writing stuff and I'd be ultimately saying, yeah, or laughing. And I think to myself, anybody else going to do that? You know, you don't know. That's the biggest thing about it.
The $1 million question, to self-publish or not self-publish, what's your suggestion?
Well, I had a publisher to start with who I fired. What was the genesis?
See where this one's going.
He was the don't get hustled. And so to answer your question, if you can get a legitimate publisher, I would recommend anybody start off by first getting an agent or trying to get an agent, which is not easy either because, you know, you mentioned the whole book thing has changed. Well, that's changed because agents now, they're like everybody in business. They're in business to make money. And most agents specialize in a certain genre. Like when you guys produce your book, and I believe you will one day, is you'll find an agent who specializes in understanding what it is you do and the kind of audience you appeal to. Nobody else is going to be interested because they don't know. They may specialize in young adult, Mockingjay kinds of things. So they don't know anything about what you're doing or what your audience is. So if you can find an agent, then they can take your book right to the right publisher. So to answer your question, I would recommend to anybody new that they work hard to get an agent, and the agent will get them a publisher. Mm. Besides, you'll accumulate 100 or 200 rejections, which is part then of your story, your bio later on.
Makes you write harder, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It really brings out all the real authentic stuff out there, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I console myself with the fact that when Mark Twain issued Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, now considered to be the great pieces of American literature, his reviews were terrible. So I console myself when somebody is getting on my case for writing about something or another that, hey.
So you know, this is kind of a unique segment here on Spiritually Raw, but we do have a lot of authors here that are coming out and more and more, and then ones more, you know, write more books and, you know, figuring stuff out. So, you know, how does one in today's world, from your opinion as an author, get a competitive edge? Like, how does that book say, okay, look at me, when there's like 20 million of them right now? I mean, what have you found out is some of the best practices that one can use?
I know how this is going to sound, but my answer to that is finding folks like you guys. I mean, it wasn't until I started focusing. Well, it's really true. I mean,
we're going to get to play an extra commercial on us for you, man. Thanks.
That's it. Another shameless plug.
Do it, man. Good.
And the reason for that is that you've got an audience, a loyal audience. You've built it up with a lot of time and trouble and heartache. And I tell new authors, look, if your book has something to say, then get out there and find blogs and over-the-air stuff and pitch them on your book. And if they're interested, they'll put you on the air. And who knows how many people are going to be listening to it.
He's never known. Never
That's the best strategy.
So what's your thoughts on the 99-cent and free book giveaways?
You know, it's another way to fatten the ego and slim the wallet.
So does that mean you're for it or you're against it?
I'm against it.
Okay, gotcha.
The reason is,
I wasn't sure because he said, you know, it was like a little of both. So
when you said it, I saw him clench your fist.
Yeah, exactly. Thinking of the money I've lost.
Right, yeah, man. Don't bring up that dirty word.
Yeah, what they are is there's some groups out there, including through Amazon and others, where the pitch is we sell your book out there for 99 cents, of which you earn, what is that? Oh, yeah, nothing.
Right.
And then you'll build your audience and people will love you. It may be a good strategy if you've got a series like, you know, like I say, like Harry Potter. Or, you know,
Harry Potter.
Yeah. And Harry Potter. Yeah, exactly. Because then if you give away one of your books and maybe it's an adventure series, the theory is that people will buy your other books. But if you only have one book.
Don't give the one book away.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. And most authors
It's a great way, if you think about what you just said, from a publisher's point of view, to encourage the writer to think that they can write a trilogy or multiple books.
Exactly correct.
Gotcha.
And the only times I've ever heard that that strategy worked was where somebody had a series already in place and they're a good writer. You know, it's a good adventure series and they break it up and all this kind of stuff. Then doing a 99 cent giveaway, you know, volume one of Stargazer or whatever you're doing, it can be a good idea.
Yeah.
Of course, if the first one you give away for 99 cents sucks, you're not going to sell any more books. Nobody's going to buy them.
You know what the hardest damn thing to sell I see on the internet is free. You know what I mean? Seriously. I'm like, you know, you know, I get all this stuff all the time. Like, I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? It's free. You know what I mean? It's all hard. I think that's one of the harder things to sell, you know, in today's world. Or the low ticket 99 cents. It's almost like, well, what's wrong? Where's that come from? Well, it kind of leads back to
chapter 14, where you say advertising is totally unnecessary unless you hope to make money.
Yeah, that's it.
I love that.
And yeah, it's really true.
That there's pretty another, much sums it all up right there.
There's another pundit in there who said, I'm wasting half of my advertising money. The problem is I just don't know which half. And, you know, it's advertising and being involved with shows like this, it's such a terrific idea because, you know, of your audience, what you can deliver. And if you're, that's the whole goal, is getting out there, get people to know you're there, and your book, your baby book, Tales from the Day, can be found at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Oh, God. I love it when I do that.
That's great. All right, Wayne McFarland, everybody. Thank you, my brother, for being on here with us today. It's been a pleasure. So can you let everybody know, just before you love and leave us, where can they find out about you, where they can buy you? Give yourself that extra plugs.
You will live long and prosper, both of you.
Thank you.
They can find more about me at WayneMcFarland.com, www.WayneMcFarland.com. And there's very important authorish looking pictures, no beret though, and stuff about the books. And so thank you. Yeah,
you're welcome, brother. It's really nice to have you on. I really enjoyed the conversation.
You have a super sweet energy.
Thanks for putting a smile on our face today.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
I liked him.
He's so cute.
I did like him a lot. He was a really cool guy. Everybody, I hope you like Wayne also. And, you know, you can always let us know by emailing us, checking it out, spirituallyraw. Oh, but by the way, if you have any comments or questions regarding any shows, you can leave those on not only YouTube but in the Patreon. You can also email us directly at spirituallyraw@gmail.com. So it was great to spend today with you again, you know, with our great guests. I hope you enjoyed it because we most certainly did on this end.
Together, we will turn the universal key to global harmony and create a unified world. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, tune in often, tell all your friends. And most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings.
know that I hardly know you. But I've been thinking about a nice baby to hold you through the night. Running out of daylight, just by for right. I'm telling you this because you got me all wrapped up in your love. I know it's been a long, hard winter. The coals are burning down to ashes and cinders, my friend. Candles down to the end. Should I spend the night again? And I'm asking you this because you got me all wrapped up in you. I know that you think I'm crazy, and if the truth be told, I'm crazy for you. It could melt this frozen soul. It could save me from the cold. And I'm telling you this because you got me all wrapped up in your love.